I'm going to take some of the methods, the nonlinear methods, and apply them to the material that John covered yesterday. Okay. And then what I'll do is, people who want to go, that's all right. And then what I'll do is I'll take some of the stuff that I did this morning that people weren't able to get involved in, and I'll get back and I'll cover that. So, because some of you maybe who heard me this morning, you say, well, all right, now where do we go? And then I thought it might be a good idea to try and see how we could tie it in to John. All right, now, here's the basic gist of what I'm going to get at. That with complexity, we have to look at whole patterns of behavior. We cannot break them down into parts. That's the essence, and I'll cover that a little bit more in the second half hour. But the question then is, okay, that's fine. How are you going to do that without getting into all this mathematics that loses us? Okay? And that's the challenge for me. And what I'm going to present to you, which is sort of the punchline, so the people who weren't part of this morning, we'll have to cover some of that other stuff later, is I'm going to show you a way of communicating that's different than the way we normally communicate. We normally communicate in writing a book. The average book's about a half mile long. Now, what I'm claiming is if we're going to talk about things that are very fundamentally different, we have to do something that's different. Okay? You can't just do the same thing. Okay? So you're going to have to do something that's different. Now, systems analysis people do this by building rather complex computer models, and then nobody really understands them, maybe not even the people who did them. That was my field. So what I want to do is I want to see if we can look at a problem and then see if we can describe it in about a dozen simple statements. Okay? A dozen simple statements. Now the problem that I'm going to describe is the one that sort of fits what John has to say. And we're going to think of human behaviors in a very different way. And here we have, from this morning, a map. Okay? And what this map is, we think of behaviors all across this map. I buy stuff? No, I don't buy stuff. Well, your behavior will be located in this region of the map. Are you stressed out? No, you'd be up in that. I don't buy stuff and I'm not stressed out. You'd be up there. Over here, however, is I buy stuff, yes, I'm stressed out. Now, the usual way we describe things in the market is, gee, if you buy stuff, then you'll feel really good. But what you've described is that what happens is when you buy stuff, boy, the behaviors just get shoved down somehow into this region of behavior space. Now, this is a different language. Somehow we get drawn into what is called, I would call, a basin of attraction. Okay? Are we all of us sort of up on that? People who were here before and people who weren't. Okay? And people who went to John's and didn't. Okay? So what happens is, usually the way we try to understand that is by looking at individual people. And say, no, that's not the way. We want to understand the basin of attraction that draws people in to this pattern, to these behaviors. That's what I want to do. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to apply a little bit of something from engineering. Most people think engineers, oh boy, they're great mathematicians. Actually, most engineers don't like math. Okay? But one of the things you've got to be good at in engineering is making sketches. You can't make a sketch, you're dead. Same way with people here working, if you're working in an electrical system, you're probably making a sketch, okay? We're going to make a sketch. We're going to do it a little different way. We're going to sketch not things, but behaviors. Get the idea? Now, this is different. Sketch behaviors. And under this rule, we're going to put a simple behavior statement in a box. Okay? Now, let's start out with an example. one box. Let's suppose you're in this class and you're totally lost. Anybody been in a class like that? Okay, we've all been there. And so I'll put a behavior in there that says the students don't ask questions. Okay? So I put in a behavior, students don't ask questions. Here it is. Here's the behavior. The students don't ask questions. I hope you can move my brain. It's a behavior. In this case, a negative behavior. Students don't ask questions. Got it? Now, under the rules of this sketching, every behavior has a reason. And that reason has to make sense from the perspective of the people acting it out. Okay, got that? So how am I going to find the reason why students don't ask questions in these classes? Well, assume they're good students. How am I going to find out?
You have to think about the student's perspective.
Like okay, and what's the best way to do that?
Ask the students.
Ask the students, which is something professors don't do. And to ask the students the questions is tricky because usually the students are trying to figure out what the professor wants and then give him that answer. But if they really are honest, what are some of the reasons a good student might give of why they don't ask questions in the class?
Don't understand it.
They're totally lost, embarrassed.
Too busy drawing.
Too busy? Yeah.
Drawing.
Drawing. Too busy drawing.
Maybe asleep, yeah.
I'm saying assume good students. Let's not blame the students. Yeah.
Maybe the course is boring.
Okay. Course may be boring.
Because it wasn't presented very well.
Well, what's the big problem with that?
The professor.
Okay. What does the professor do that prevents people from asking questions?
There's lots of
might
things you can do.
Huh?
Intimidated.
They might be intimidated.
Might be intimidated. They go too fast.
Too much information.
Okay, we begin to get a whole bunch of these. So one of the things I'll write down in here that usually comes up, and the students have a hesitancy saying it, because usually the professor who's asking the question doesn't. And they say, the prof goes too fast. And we draw an arrow. Okay, now, what I want you to do is I want you to read it. When you read it, you go forward on an arrow, you say, therefore. If you go backwards, you say, because. So, the students don't ask questions because the professor goes too fast. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Or the professor goes too fast, therefore the students don't ask questions. But now, under our rules, we have to find out every behavior has to have a reason, one incoming arrow. Maybe more, at least one. And our diagram is incomplete because the professor goes too fast doesn't have a reason. So how are we going to find out? The reason has to make sense from the perspective of the person acting it out. You can't speak for someone else.
It's probably because the students don't ask questions.
That's right. Okay, that's right. This is what the professors say right in here. Okay? Now, what we found is the simple rule. Every behavior has a reason. The only way you can sketch it is in a loop. You get it? And this is the strange thing we're looking for. We're no longer communicating in lines. We're communicating in loops. Because a loop is a pattern of behavior where every behavior has a reason. An incoming arrow. Also, every behavior has a consequence, an outgoing arrow. And it's the pattern that's formed by the multiple reinforcing loops. That's what we want to look for. And if you simply break it down into parts, instead of each part, what do you miss? The loop. And the loop is what allows it to continue. You got it? Mm-hmm. So, now what I do is I go back to my map. Okay, so there's the map. And I want to ask the students, how do you get caught there? Okay? And I have to go ahead and sketch a map by listening to their behaviors. Got it? And then what that will do will describe the character of what I call the basin of attraction. The basin that draws their behaviors into it. Okay? Now, what I got some handouts where I actually went and I got the students up there and I started sketching things. Behaviors. Well, what happens here? Why happens here? And they say such things. Hey, I'm stressed out. Well, why are you stressed out? I don't have any money. A big thing that they would say. Don't have any money. Okay. And that all? Fine. I got debts. So I'm stressed out. I don't have any money. I got debts. Well, what do you do when you're stressed out? I look for diversions. What's a common diversion people look for?
Shopping
and watching TV. Right? You're beginning to get it. So what I did is I kept asking them, okay, well, come on, Nicola. Why do you act that behavior? What's the consequences of that? And we kept scribbling all over the boards. And then we would draw things down. And at the end of about 2 hours, I had all these statements across, and we had to throw out some. And then students stayed after class. We helped working it out. And the next day, I revised it. And what I ended up with is this pattern right here. Okay? Now, the way to read this pattern, and let me get some going on the other side, is you look at the pattern and you say, where do I start? And the answer is any place you want to. Okay? That's not the way you read a book. And then you say, which way do I go? Okay? And the answer is any direction you want. Okay? And as you read this, what you do is, any more? Need some more? This is the pattern right up here that we got. And what I'll do is I'll read it. I'll show you how you read it. And this came out from the students. Okay? We're stressed out. Why? Because we can't pay off our debts and we don't have enough money. That makes sense. Well, what do you do when you're stressed out? What do you look for diversions? What do you do then? Therefore, we space out on TV. Then they had other behaviors over here, like, look, we work hard to make money. Well, why? Because we don't have enough money. And what's the consequences of working hard? Well, we're stressed out. Okay. Do you buy stuff? Oh, yeah, we buy stuff. How do you buy stuff when you don't have money? Well, we charge it. Okay. Why? Well, because we don't have enough money. That's why. That makes sense. No? I say, well, why do you buy stuff? Well, look, we deserve some rewards. Why? Because we work hard. Besides, look at all those happy people with all this great stuff. Where do you see them? Oh, we watch television. Why? Because we look for diversions. What else do you do? Well, sometimes we go to the shopping center. Well, we buy stuff, but hey, we deserve it. You begin to get it? What they have are reasons for every behavior. Okay? For every behavior, they have reasons. Now, I'll read through the thing. Just I can go forward or backwards. So what I'll do is I'll read through, and sometimes I'll go forward, sometimes I'll go backwards. We're stressed out because we can't pay off our debts because we owe a lot. Therefore, we work hard to make more money. Therefore, we're stressed out. Therefore, we buy stuff. Therefore, we charge it because we don't have enough money. Therefore, we can't pay off our debts. Because we owe it. Because we charge it. Because we buy stuff. Because we see a lot of happy people with a lot of great stuff. Therefore, we go shopping. Therefore, we buy stuff. Because we're stressed out. Therefore, we look for diversions. Therefore, we space out on TV. Therefore, we see a lot of happy people with a lot of great stuff. Therefore, we buy stuff because we feel like we deserve rewards. Therefore, we go shopping. Okay? You see, and I was just randomly going back and forward and backwards. Okay? Forward and backwards. And what happens is it all makes sense. Okay? Now, what we describe, now, I usually when I draw these, I start out with an I statement. I do this. I do this. And that means you have to be confessional. You're not saying, they do this. You're not laying a trick on them. Sorry. But then we converted it to a we, and the we is not simply the sum of I, the pluralibi. Because what we do depends a lot upon what other people do. We do this, well, everybody does this. And as long as each one of us think, well, we do this because everybody does this, then guess what? Everybody does this. At least everybody we hang around with. Okay? So you see, the we is not simply the sum. It's the interactive we. We think this is makes sense because, well, everybody does it. Why does everybody do it? Because it seems to make sense. Why? Because everybody does it. See, it becomes a self-reinforcing we. So the word we is no longer simply the plural of I. That's the same way with beliefs. Why do we believe something? Well, other people believe it. If I didn't believe it, they'd think I was crazy. I mean, why do you believe that the earth is round rather than flat? Anybody check that out? Now, you see, there's a whole lot of beliefs that we have that are part of self-reinforcing patterns of behavior. And we would be crazy if we didn't have them. Okay? We need these patterns to survive, but they can also be destructive. Now, what happens is these patterns, the students say, well, once you get in it, it's so hard to get out. And yet, inside of it, it makes sense. Now, what you can do for homework, and I'm going a little fast because we're going to try some other stuff, is read through, forward and backwards, this pattern. Okay? Read it, forward and backwards. It's not the usual kind of reading. And some people look at that and say, oh, I can't do that, it's too complex. It's easy. But all you have to do is remember to start any place you want, and you choose to go forward or backwards. If you go forward, say therefore. If you go backwards, you say because. And then what you have to do is you have to wander around. You can't just skim it. If you want to know something about Holden Village, you wander around and get to know the place. You don't just fly over and look down there, I know it. So you have to wander around. And as you wander around the diagrams, you begin to understand the whole pattern, which is different than the parts. You get it? It's very different than the parts. Now, once we get this whole pattern, what we can do is we can go ask people, why are you doing what you're doing? And for anybody in this system, they'll have good reasons. Okay? So I'll ask some people, why are you so stressed? Look, at the end of the month, it's really stressful. I work hard, but I just don't have enough money and I can't pay off my debts. I always seem to be behind. I hate it. Is that consistent with a pattern? Yeah, it fits. It fits. Second, so how do you handle the stress? Sometimes I just come home, flop down, and space out on TV. You know, it's a diversion and it's free. Okay? Aren't those people so nice? They give you free TV. And sometimes you go shopping? Well, yeah, everybody does it. This is America. It's a diversion. With all the work I do, I deserve something. Besides, look at all those happy people with all this great stuff. Which people? You know, everybody. These guys on TV. Look at them. And my friends, too. But how can you buy stuff when you don't have enough money? I just charge it just like everybody else. It's easy. Everybody does it. But then you all are like, well, yeah, that's why I work so hard. I'm not lazy. I deserve something. Okay? Are the payments side? Yeah, they just seem to build up. These companies keep offering me new cards with higher credit, so I must not be so bad. Everybody does it. I don't know how I live without the cards. Like, I wouldn't get anything. Okay? So you use the credit cards? Yes, but not all the time. Well, sometimes. Only when I really need to, at the end of the month, when I'm out of cash. And you feel like you deserve the rewards? Right. I work hard, and then what do I get? Stress. Give me a break. It's cool getting something. Like the people on TV, well, yeah, well, not just them, my friends too. You don't see them having fun with nothing. Okay? Now, I read this to the students, and you'll see some of them sort of shrinking down into their seats. And the data indicate that about 50% of the students, something like that, will get caught under these patterns. And I have had students stand up in class and give testimonials and confessions. Like, my husband and I, graduate students, were so trapped in this, we had to go home and live with our parents. And when we finally got out, we cut up the credit cards. and spelled out, no more credit cards with the pieces. And then you hear other people sort of sitting there like, don't ask me, because they're getting in. They're getting in. You can just see it on the bottom. And then I'd ask them, how many credit card applications do you get as college students? Every week they get them. I said, I don't get many. I hardly ever get them. Why? Because I pay off my credit card every month. They don't make money off of me. Okay? So I said, why do you really get them? And he said, because we're vulnerable to getting this. We're easily influenced. We've got all our peers who want more stuff. And by being college students, we likely are going to have a higher income so that when they can get us into this, they can keep us a good source of money. Okay, so you get it. So then I asked them, okay, tell me, how are you going to get out of this? What I would do is, and I would do this in class, and say, so anybody remember, you know, when Jesus healed people, what did he ask them? Do you want to be healed? Yeah. So the question is, do you want to live like this? If the answer is yes, okay. If the answer is no, what are you going to do? And they realize you can't just say, well, we just want to use credit cards. The pattern is powerful. And they realize, they began to talk about things like, well, maybe there's another way we have to deal with stress. Okay? Turn off the television, particularly commercial television, right? Turn off, they didn't say, yeah, turn off the television. Learn another way to deal with stress. And how do you do that? And it's amazing what they came up with. One of the women, Sarah, okay, she came up in one class, we were talking about how these systems sap your spirit. They sap your spirit. And the question to students, how do you keep your spirit? There's a lot of systems that sap that. And we were talking about things, and one of these guys just comes up so angry. He's talking about all these environmental problems. And we're trying to tell him, you know, solutions. And Sarah sits there. And Sarah's one of the people who doesn't say much, but when she speaks, you better listen. And she looks at him and says, you know, forgiveness is not letting someone else off the hook. What happens is part of our stress is we get in bitterness patterns. We sketch them. Self-reinforcing patterns of bitterness. And forgiveness is a liberation from that pattern. So a lot of our stresses, you begin to find that there's other patterns that produce those stresses. And they can add to this. Okay? So what I wanted to do, that's, first of all, any questions on this? I'm going real quick on this thing. I wasn't intending to, but okay.
No, we're not asking.
Yeah. Going too fast. That's true. Okay.
Don't. This pattern, this behavior map, if you added the liberating aspects of, there's probably some liberating aspects when you buy stuff, like it's useful for food or something. Some things are useful. Or
work
hard to make more money, right. There might be self-esteem or something. So the liberated things that you mentioned, get added then to these?
You have to disrupt the pattern. There is a concept in ecology known that the state of an ecosystem reflects its disturbance regime. History of disturbances, that includes fires, storms. If you suppress the fires and the storms, okay, that changes the ecosystems and eventually for the worse. That is also the prophetic tradition. We get caught within these patterns. And the prophetic tradition is a disruptive tradition. God disrupts systems through our actions and calls us out of bondage. And we have to act in a different way, and it disrupts the system. And in dynamic systems, that's how the systems reform, through their disruptions. So what we have to do is we have to go ahead and we have to say, do I want to live like this? Like Jesus said, ask the person. And then we have to start living a different life, which we're going to have all these reasons why not. Okay? But we have to do it on faith. Okay? And then we break the bondage of the system. Okay? But these continually occur. It's not like you have faith and then, oh, now the problem's solved.
But,
these, yeah.
But just like the idea of humor or music, you can't draw a fate, you can't draw a behavior map.
Right, but you can. Fate transcends these patterns. Right. It goes beyond the patterns, correct. And a lot of the spiritual disciplines that we're covering at Holden are trying to break us out of these patterns. You walk the labyrinth, you're trying to get out of context with the patterns you're in. You're trying to get in a different space. Spiritual direction, where you actually have someone who's actually listening at a quiet time as you search. You're trying to hear God beyond the patterns that you're in.
But those are still linear. Labyrinth is linear.
It's a practice. The labyrinth, I don't know whether I'd call it linear. The practice is to get us out of those patterns. Worship, meditative prayer. We're trying to, in a sense, be in touch with something, God, which is not part of the pattern, which is beyond the pattern. And we need the discipline, because these patterns are always with us. And you've seen this, you go into church, your mind is still going. You can still get caught in these patterns. And a lot of the patterns are destructive ones, such as resentment, given these patterns. Okay, other comments, questions? I'm going to cover some of these patterns a little bit more on Friday. And we'll be going over some of them, and maybe having skips on it.
How often is there a pattern of breaking the pattern within a community? Does that make sense?
Well, what happens is, quite often, if you don't break the patterns, they get stronger. And they can be very destructive. So there's a continual breaking of patterns. And as you look around, there's people who do things that are acts of gifts. Sort of breaks the patterns. I think that the key I've tried to get with my students, we're now generalizing, we're making, is I actually have them sketch the patterns that they've been caught up in. And we have abusive patterns, drinking patterns, and students are really honest about it. And they'll sketch the patterns. One guy even had no girlfriend pattern. I don't have a girlfriend because I lack the social skills, but I don't go out because I don't have a girlfriend. Okay, so, and then that just expanded. Procrastination was another one that they had. One of them, yeah.
Because a lot of people from Holden are, I would say religious or church minded. Where would stewardship and the way I was seeing this was ministers, when people have called up people for all different kinds of giving, and it ended up many times clergy, and you call them up, and they stand there and they're saying, I'm giving all the time, I'm giving all the time, I have no more to give.
Well, and then I can't sketch the pattern for clergy. But the clergy, you know, you put down the statement, I feel like I'm giving all the time. But why? Because. And you begin to see that quite often. Then what you begin to find is that the good qualities that we have become carried too far, and then they become caught within a pattern. But I could not sketch one for, say, a minister who was in that. I can appreciate that. What I could do is, there were a group of ministers, I started doing like I did with the students. I started putting these down, and they would have to tell me. And then finally, if I got the pattern up there, and the people were in it, and they go, whoa, you described my life, then you'd say, we got a pretty good pattern, you sketched the pattern. But I can't tell someone else. We were talking about how you'll get somebody, president, I won't name any, you might say the welfare queen, you know, the person abusing welfare, and they'll say, this is why they're doing it. That's not what you would do here. You would actually have to go to people on welfare, and you would have to ask them, okay? And then you can make the sketch there. And they would have to be reflective and honest. If they're just blaming somebody else, other people are involved in it, but if that's all they're doing is blaming someone else, then you find you can't close the loops. And you have to speak for yourself. I would have managers tell me, problem, this is not a problem. So I write down, managers believe this is not a problem. I say, well, why? There's no data. Okay? Managers believe because there's no data on this problem. Why are there no data? Okay. Because nobody studied it. Why? Because nobody's allocated the money. Why? Because the managers don't believe it's a problem. Okay? You see? And so you find the lock-in behavior, and the thing is, the managers are telling the truth. I don't believe it's a problem. Okay? So if we simply say, oh, they're a bunch of liars, they may be. There are liars in the world. But generally, when I first go into something, I think, oh, those liars. And then as I get to know them, I don't find that many. I find people busy and, you know, pretty much like myself out there. And if I was the president of the university, and I'd probably be caught in the same pattern that he's caught in. So what happens is this method provides an alternative to blame. And it provides a discipline that forces us to listen more and blame less. And it forces us to look at whole patterns and not break them down into little pieces. It forces us to do that. And that's the value of the method. And what I'll do is
do you have a sense of how on this supposedly do these kinds of things? How we figure out what might be the best place to intervene to,
yeah, that's a good
break,
question.
To break the chain?
Yeah, and generally is everywhere you can is the answer. Because these patterns, because they have these multiple arrows in, if one arrow doesn't work, the other one gets you. So we would say, don't watch as much TV. Now people would say, well, what does that have to do with credit card use? What does that have to do? Well, when you see the pattern, how it loops back, it has a lot to do with it. But if you simply isolate the part, it doesn't have much to do with it at all. Okay? You see what I mean? So,
what if they say, but if I don't watch TV, then I feel even more stressed, and I have no outlet for myself?
Then I would say, on the short term, you're probably right, because TV is addictive. And when you need to go and withdraw. And I think that the science is, and video games also. They
so
really
people have to be open to a certain cold turkey. That all of this becomes addictive, and there isn't an easy.
There isn't an easy. So people who come up and just say, oh, just do this, like an abusive relationship, just leave the guy, whatever it is, or alcohol, just don't drink, you know. They trivialize the problem. It's a tough problem, who are caught in it, and if people can recognize in their own language the pattern, and then we realize how powerful these patterns are, then we can support them, and then, of course, then that's where prayer comes in. You ask for strength to break, you know, to break out of these patterns, because they are powerful. And that's one thing, they really are powerful, and they're hard to get out of sometimes. It's sometimes painful. And sometimes it takes a crisis like that one guy that were there. But generally, when people get out of that pattern, they find other ways of dealing with stress. They don't have to worry about that paying that bill that last month. They're not in the rat race. It wouldn't go back.
Yeah. Work in a very large, complex, multi-discipline, multi-jurisdictional organization like NASA, for instance.
Yes.
As you were talking, you know, thinking of a challenge.
Okay, I'll tell you the story on the challenge. That's perfect. Okay, listen. The first one that I did on this, I did in the late 70s, and it was on environmental impact assessment and how information gets distorted in organizations. I had never studied NASA. 1986, the shuttle explodes. And I see Richard Feynman, who was on the commission, physicist on the commission. He's on television and he's explaining, he's using his arms. That's like my loop diagram. So I send them a diagram, the distortion of information, which looks sort of these loops, and it has a table where everybody has a reason. And he writes back to me and he says, perfect prediction. Now, I knew when he used those terms, but if you're Richard Feynman on this, you could say that. He says, what was in the table is exactly what the people were telling me. He didn't realize that NASA was part of the general phenomenon. Okay? So I didn't realize it either. I also didn't realize he was dying of cancer at the time. And then, I published it. So generally, we have found large organizational systems we can do this. I'm applying this now. I'm working on this to apply this to Enron, North of Anderson. What kind of patterns should they get caught into? I will, on Thursday and Friday, Saturday, I'll apply it to the Soviet biological warfare system. Huge system. How could people do such a terrible thing? And I'm also working somewhat on trying to apply it to the war in Iraq, the intelligence failures. But that's been a very hard one to do, emotionally draining one to do. I've had to set it aside periodically. I can slip in the blame far too easily, and it's a very lonely one to do. Because on that issue, everybody has already chosen up sides right off the bat. And as soon as you choose up sides, you're making the intellectual commitment to one particular way, particularly with a web. You can find anything you want on the web to support any view you want. So as soon as you make sides, everybody's got all their information. What about this? And so if you're really trying to do it without blame, it becomes really difficult and sometimes pretty lonely. It's hard, you're trying to do it. So I have been working on that one, and I can tell you some of the things that I found on that. There are patterns that are out there. And it is a very difficult discipline. This one has, I think, 12 or 13 statements. And by forcing yourself to only have, say, about a dozen statements, it forces you to set aside a whole lot of details and look for what is fundamental.
Yeah. Would that be also, speaking of Iraq, would that also have a harder implication of
Well, the big implication is that I come up with this when I study organizations. We need to take seriously three things. One, we have to have independent checks and balances. All organizations can get into this. That's the first thing. And I wish the Democrats would make that a political issue, because a lot of the checks and balances, independent checks and balances, have eroded over time. When you find someone works for the EPA, writes the laws, and then gets a job with the industry right off the bat to show how to get around, that is just immoral. That is wrong. And when you appoint a lobbyist who campaigned against safety rules, and they become now head of the safety division, I mean there's just too much of that. We've got to take back the flag, in one sense, independent checks and balances. The second thing is you've got to challenge universities. They have fallen down. They should be educating alert, knowledgeable citizenry. We need citizens. We're not just training people for jobs. And without the questions of the citizens asking, these systems just grow. Thirdly, I think we have to reconsider the notion of responsibility. You can't simply say, oh, in the context of the system, it all made sense. I'm not to blame. Okay? Faith is a responsibility that transcends, goes beyond. Whatever system you're caught with, you still have a responsibility. God calls you out of bondage. We have to recover that language of faith. Those are the three things that that I would say we really need as led community.
I see that in the apathy of voters. Trying to look at the lesser of two evils.
Yeah.
One evil is no any better than the other.
But I'd watch out that we don't just get into blame. I'd watch out in there. No, I wouldn't want to be running for president for either party. Okay, but right now, mainly because I've been in the university, I say I think we ought to challenge the universities. That's where my life has been. I think there are other places too. Well, I will be doing some more stuff on this, and I will be doing the Soviet biological warfare system. It is a heavy. But there is something, I've learned so much about myself in this. That sounds strange. I've never worked on a biological warfare system. But the behaviors that went on in there when I made the sketches, I recognized them. And therefore, I am led to the prayer, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil, rather than the prayer, thank God I'm not like them. Okay? So that's what I'll be starting on Thursday. Well, what I can do now is anyone who wants to stay, we can do that. The rest of you are welcome to go. Those we'll talk a little bit more about what I did this morning, which is related to this. Okay? So anybody who wants to leave, go ahead, take off. I know John's probably, you've done a lot. Let's take a and he caught me this morning, so. Okay, now if you were at this morning, you can stay if you want. You just take off if you want, because I'm going to repeat what I want.
Can you leave the overhead here? Just have to
I can?
Yeah.
Okay, good, sure. I'll leave the overhead. What I covered this morning is we are facing a challenge to think in new ways. What I'm showing you is my attempt to do that. But what I want to do is I want to get back to some, what's going on here? What do some of the discoveries in mathematics have to do with this new way of thinking? And in order to understand this, you don't have to know anything about mathematics, the first thing. But I hope that there are some people who know more about it than I do, because that's always what I always learn something here. And what you have to realize, if you take the time of Martin Luther, about 1500, if you go sort of one life before that, you get Gutenberg, who developed the press. And if you go one life, maybe a little bit more than that, you get Galileo and Newton. So Martin Luther was really thinking in the older way, but he was part of introducing a whole new way. And that became formalized in Galileo and Newton and others. So this was a transitional time. And what happened during this era, a lot of things. We started wearing watches. We started reading books. We became a literate society. So if you want to be a literalist, you first have to have the literature. And oral societies aren't literate. the literal interpretation. Everyone go up there, what are you talking about? Okay? And we found tremendous changes that occurred during this time. Now, one of the changes that occurred, by the way, is the meaning of faith changed. There's a guy Wilfred Cantwell Smith, who plotted the titles of books and the word religion before this time, say roughly 1600. Before this time, the word religion never appeared. Never appeared. It's not in the Old Testament. As a system of beliefs. The word faith was there. Then, as we passed through this time period, Luther and Newton, then what we found were the word religion came, and then religions in the plural. And he claims this new way of thinking led to a modern heresy. And that heresy is faith equals belief. That's a heresy, he says. Faith is not equal to belief.
Who said that?
Wilfred Cantwell Smith, and there's others who have said that, particularly belief in propositions. In fact, the word believe comes closer to the word beloved. So when we give our hearts to, that's not our heads, our hearts to Jesus, that's what Christianity is about. It's forming a relationship with a person. This is very different than belief statements about a person. So, anyhow, what does mathematics have to do with this? Well, what mathematics does is it formalizes in a very rigorous ways the ways we think. Okay? So that's important. Because what happened is mathematics formalized our ways of thinking, and in the last couple decades,
they found that those ways of thinking don't make sense. Maybe overstated that. Let me first go over the mathematics very quickly, and in particular, differential equations. Okay, you don't have to know anything about differential equations. What I would say is, I'm on a road that's going south, and I start here, and I go for 20 miles an hour south. Okay, where will I be in 1 hour? 20 miles down the road. So if I know where this is a certain town, okay, I will predict in 1 hour I'll be here. Okay, that makes sense? Right, now, that is the essence of differential equations. What you start out is starting point, initial condition, and then you know the rate of change, the rate. Except now, in mathematics, they define the rate in some very sophisticated conditions. It doesn't have to be a constant rate. It can be changing. And it can be in three dimensions of space, zinging around. But the idea is still the same. And once you know the initial condition, and you know the rate of change, after a given period of time, you can predict where you'll be. Now, I did three dimensions instead of one. So it's the same idea as 20 miles an hour going down the street, the rate. And so, through the use of differential equations, we could end up making predictions. So prediction and control, defining things really exactly, that was really important. If you want a precise prediction, precise measurements, being precise. There's only one problem. There were a certain categories of these equations that they could solve, and other categories they couldn't. The equations they could solve were generally linear equations. And the ones that they didn't know what to do with were nonlinear. So what did they do? Well, what we do is we just set aside the ones that we can't understand. And that's what we did for 300 years. We set aside the nonlinear equations. Okay? So along comes the digital computer. Okay? And what it can do is it can approximate the solution to these nonlinear equations. And the results were bizarre. Bizarre. Weird. Strange. And what we found was, for 300 years, we were learning to think linearly because we could only solve those equations. But the world is nonlinear, okay? And it doesn't behave in that nice, precise, controllable way, okay? What they found was, let's suppose we had these equations, and I went and I defined my starting point here, you know, 9.76, blah, 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 big long number. I did all my data. And you went and you did your data, okay? And maybe you even went further than I did. So, you know, you added some more decimal points to it. And then you forgot about the assignment, so you guessed, okay? And we all turned it in. So I worked all day long, got this. You worked even longer, got this. He went out and had a good time and came back and just turned in a number. We put them in the computer, same computer, in different conditions, initial conditions. And over time, his looks different than ours. But after a period of time, you can't tell the difference between his and ours. His may be over here, and mine's over here, and yours is down here, and then maybe another time, yours and mine are closer than his. Precise prediction doesn't work. That's called chaos. Chaos doesn't mean disorder, because the equations are deterministic. They are orderly equations. So the idea that you can define the future by setting formal rules down, you can't do it. Because the mathematics does that very well, defines formal rules. And even with some fairly simple nonlinear equations, you can't make the predictions. But what happens is that with these equations, these mathematicians would start tracing the results. Here's the equation describing what happens. And it starts looping around space and doing all this crazy stuff. And these mathematicians are presenting this stuff at a conference, and people are looking through the loophole and woo-wah. That's the end of the presentation. You're going, what are they doing? And what they found is that that while you couldn't make precise predictions, you could recognize that there were common patterns, forms, called attractors. So one particular set of equations, you could sort of recognize the attractor from that equation, but you couldn't make a precise prediction. So the lesson I got out of that, the general lesson I got out of that, is don't try to make precise predictions. We got to look for patterns. You get it? That's the general lesson. Now, one of the things they found out about the difference between the linear and nonlinear equations is the linear ones, you can add up the parts to get the whole. And the nonlinear ones, you can't. You can't do it. Okay? So if you want to understand a linear system, you can break it down into parts and study the parts. If it's nonlinear, you're not going to understand it by breaking it down into parts. Well, at a university, one of the first things we do when they walk in the door is split things into parts, little different disciplines. They don't talk to each other. Well, you can't do that to understand the nonlinear wholes. Let me give an example. If the world were linear, we could break the whole down into parts. Okay? I'm going a little fast, I know. I'm doing what I did there. Okay? That would mean we could take a joke, we could break it down to words, measure the humor content of each word, add it up and see if the joke is funny. It doesn't work. If the world were linear, I could be a great musician, okay? Here's a great, really good musician. I'm not. But if the world were linear, I could be just as good as you. I could go up to the piano and I could say, well, gee, how does this note sound? Oh, that sounds pretty good. How about this one? How about the, we'll try a black one. Okay? So I say, okay, now, those are all nice, great notes. I'll just play a lot of great notes, and that'll be a lot of great music. And so I'd start playing a lot of music, and you'd say, stop, that's terrible. The whole is not equal to the sum of the parts. That's very clear. Okay? So what happens is there's so many things in the world where the whole, you can't break it down to the parts, then we've got to learn to deal with wholes. Big wholes. Big. Now, there's a few other things that they learn from nonlinear systems. Sometimes they can be going along, and no matter what you do, you can't change them. And then, all of a sudden, they reach a certain state where they can flip to a whole other position, a whole other behavior. And so you can't simply extrapolate, because you get in trouble. Think of this in a course. I say, boy, we're going to have good learning. Okay, really taught, learn. So how much you learn we measure on this scale. And this is how many assignments we give. So, hey, if we don't give any assignments, they're not going to learn much. So if we give more assignments, they'll learn more. More assignments, they'll learn more. What happens? You pass a certain phase, you've given them so much work, they stop learning. Right? It just flips. And all they're doing is passing the test to try to get the grade. Because you overdid. You passed the threshold where the whole system flipped into a different pattern. Okay? And a good teacher's recognize that. You watch the students, right? You see in their eyes, you got to watch that. But if you've got demands by some external administrator to cover so much topics, and so forth and so on, what happens is the students learn to pass the test. That's what they learn, which is different than learning the material. Okay, let me describe a nonlinear behavior in the Bible. Okay? Two stories, Sodom and Gomorrah. God's going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. Abraham, the prophet Abraham, okay? Negotiates it with God to lower the standards, right? Isn't that how the story goes? And God goes along, okay, I'll lower the standards. Well, how about lowering it some more? Okay, how about some more? Finally, he's down so low that if he keeps going, there won't be any standards. But even Abraham has to stop. And Abraham, the prophet Abraham, can't save Sodom and Gomorrah. That's like the nonlinear system. No matter what you do, you can't seem to save it. But sometimes, there's a special time, in biblical time, Kairos time, where you can change the whole system, just with one word, maybe. And that's the story of Jonah and Nineveh. Jonah is the incompetent prophet. He's called, he doesn't want to go, he's going to run away from God. How are you going to run away from God? He gets on a boat, you know, goes home, gets thrown overboard, gets swallowed by a fish, barfed up on the shore, smelling like fish, figuring, I guess I better go. Here he's going through the desert. Imagine what he smelled like. Goes out and there's this huge city, not the little dinky Sodom and Gomorrah, here's this huge city, Nineveh, takes him 3 days to walk in the middle of the city. He goes in there, gives probably the world's worst sermon, like repent or get burned or something like that, I don't know. Turns around, walks out, and he's waiting for the Nineveh to get burned. And what happened? The whole city repents, and he's angry. He's angry. And so then he tells God in the end, he says, I knew you were compassionate, that's why I didn't want to come. He didn't even want him to repent. Okay? That's non-linear, you see. Abraham tries to change these things, and they have so many feedbacks that they can't change. But sometimes, if you speak for justice, even if you're incompetent to speak for justice, the whole system can flip. And that produces an ethic. Okay? The time when the system's ready to flip, let's call it Kairos time. That's the time when it can flip. In systems language, that might be bifurcation time. Okay? So, what happens is, let's suppose you call for justice and nothing happens. And I happen to walk in like Jonah, and I call for justice and the whole system flips. I don't deserve any more credit than you do. Because I didn't produce Kairos time. You never know when it's Kairos time. These complex systems you don't know. So the real tragedy is if Kairos time comes and no one calls for justice. So the answer is always call for justice. Okay, that's non-linear behavior and I'll be following up on this. Just remember, you can't break the whole down into parts and you can't add them up. So evil may not. The outcome of those bad people, the character of the whole even, may not be reduced to bad people. Which means, gee, maybe evil happens from the actions that are people much like us. Kind of scary. But that may be the world. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.